Our Lady of Lourdes. Just by a show of hands, how many of you are not members of this parish? Thank you. Welcome. There are refreshments in the back, which you probably already figured out. And if you do need to use the restroom, you can exit through these doors and then go down the hall. And right around the corners.
So, there's one in the kitchen, too.
And there is one in the kitchen as well. So those are the housekeeping duties. But again, I want to thank you for this wonderful turnout. It's amazing. We were going to have the whole hall open, but I was playing a little bit of a mind trick on you so that with the partition, I wanted to force people to sit together at tables rather than, because you would have been far more spread out. So, again, thank you. The way the evening is going to work is in this manner. I welcome you, and I'm going to give you a rundown of how the evening's going to work, but then the presenters will do their portion, each of them about 15, 20 minutes-ish. And then after both are finished, you will go to table discussions. So you'll have conversations at your table. And just to give you an idea, I will remind you when it comes to that time exactly what you will be discussing. But just so as you're listening to the presenters, what you will talk about what you heard or what you learned in their presentation, and then based on your faith tradition, what has been your personal understanding of Mary, and then finally, as you're talking, if someone would gather, if there's any questions, rather than try to figure it out yourself, just write the question down, because after the time for group your discussion, we'll have a larger group discussion, and we can present any questions to our two presenters, and they will answer them if they are able. So this isn't try to stump the presenter.
Thanks, Jim.
So on the table, all of you have, or you should have, the conversation covenant. And this should go without saying that the idea behind it is that you will have a civil, decent discussion at the table. There will be no judging. You will let each, you know, everybody will speak, have their chance to speak, and no arguing, you know. And I don't expect that that's going to happen. If it does, I'm ready. We'll take you into the kitchen to clean.
In the corner.
Exactly. So I encourage you to sign that, because that is a commitment to the people at your table, and then keep that in hand as your discussion goes on. So that if someone does tend to wander off and talk about, you know, their grocery shopping experience today, you can kind of use that as a way to rope them back in. So as you know, we have two presenters. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to introduce each one of them. But they will be speaking, it will be, one will speak first, the other will speak second. But rather than doing another bio, you know, introduction again, I'm just going to introduce both of them to you right away. Our first speaker this evening is Patricia Lewis, or Trish. Trish Lewis is a professor of religious studies at El Verno College. In her 14 years at El Verno, Trish has taught about religion and identity, myth, symbol, and ritual, moral theology, interfaith studies, leadership, and vocation. Trish earned her PhD at Marquette University, writing her dissertation on the body as symbol, bringing together theories of sex, gender, and race for theological discourse. I'm happy for something else.
Fantastic.
Trish is a former member of the Greater Milwaukee Catholic Education Consortium Board and the Committee for Schools, Theology, and Faith Formation, which worked to improve K-12 Catholic education in Milwaukee and bring outcome-based approaches to faith formation. She is deeply interested in the future of education and how we can better help students bring their particular gifts into this world. This evening, Trish will present on Mary from the Catholic Christian tradition. Our second presenter this evening is Janann Najib. Janann is so passionate about correcting misconceptions of Muslims, especially women, that she left her microbiology career to devote her time to building bridges in Milwaukee. Janann seeks to dispel common myths, explaining, for instance, the diverse range of countries that Muslims live in. She's best known as the founding member and current president of the Milwaukee Muslim Women's Coalition, frequently speaking at interfaith events such as this, and serving as a spokeswoman. She's taught at Cardinal Stritch University, is publisher of the Wisconsin Muslim Journal, and is director of the Muslim Resource Center on the South Side, which is open to the public. As another way to share the Muslim experience, promote understanding, and address current events, in 2015, she founded the Milwaukee Muslim Film Festival, which is partnered with Milwaukee Film. She was also the first Muslim woman to open the Wisconsin legislature with a prayer. Janann, who has lived most of her life in Milwaukee, was born in Jerusalem and is of Palestinian heritage. She's won countless awards for her work, including recently the Frank Zeidler Award from the Interfaith Conference of Greater Milwaukee, which they call her one of the best known and most active advocates for interreligious understanding, tolerance, and friendship in Southeast Wisconsin. And this evening, Janann will present on Mary from the Muslim tradition. So without further ado, our first speaker this evening, Trish.
Discussions, that's when we'll bring them all forward.
Good evening, everybody. Hi, I'm Trish Lewis. And in preparing for tonight, I had one of the best text exchanges. You might not think it's funny, I thought it was hilarious. But I was off to visit a good friend of mine, Susan, who is a theologian and a teacher and a devout Catholic. And I texted, "Susan, I need to talk to you about Mary." To which she responded, "The mother of God? Or do we know an earthly Mary we need to discuss?" I said, "The mother of God." She said, "Interesting." So I hope you too find what I'm going to say here tonight interesting and helpful as you continue to contemplate Mary as part of your own spiritual journey and a point of connection between faiths. Now, I want to say at the beginning, as a theologian, I am not an expert on Mary. The school system of St. Francis somehow connected me to Jim, who then talked me into coming tonight, and I thought, oh my goodness, I'm going to have to study. So even though I'm not an expert, I've always been fascinated and comforted by Mary. In preparation for this evening, I did consult church teaching. I talked to colleagues and friends about Mary and found points of connection to an important idea within my own theological work, which is symbol. So I want to talk about how thinking of Mary as a symbol helps us engage with the complexity of her experience and her place within Catholic doctrine and devotion. So looking back, I should have answered my friend's question when she asked, "Mother of God or earthly Mary?" with yes, both, and. So before we get to Mary as symbol, let me say a few words to explain what I mean by symbol. Symbol in Catholic theology may be a bit different than how we think about it in everyday life. In Catholic theology, a symbol is a material reality that points beyond itself to larger ideas and mystery. It is understood both within its particular context and in a more expansive way, beyond the context in which we find it. This means that it holds within itself the particularities of the immediate time and space in which it exists, and the bigger realities to which it invites us. Symbols are multifaceted and sometimes contain contradictions. They are continually revelatory to us as we contemplate them more and more. So I'm going to invite us to think about Mary as a symbol in various ways. So let's begin our exploration of Mary by contemplating her as a symbol of new life. Mary was a real woman who lived over 2,000 years ago in a specific place and era, but she points beyond her particularity to all life. The church sees her in the very beginnings and the end times. The church understands Mary as the new Eve and teaches in its catechism that just as a woman had a share in the coming of death, so also should a woman contribute to the coming of life. In Genesis, we see her foreshadowed in the words God spoke to the serpent, "I will put enmity between you and the woman, and between her, your offspring and hers. He will strike at your head, and you will strike at his heel." We meet her again in the last book of the Bible, Revelation, when we read, "And a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars." Mary, as symbol, points beyond herself to the story of her son Jesus and the larger narrative of Christian salvation, which includes all time. In the Catechism, it states, what the Catholic faith believes about Mary is based on what it believes about Christ, and what it teaches about Mary illumines in turn its faith in Christ. Let us think about Mary as a symbol of discipleship. In the story of the Annunciation, Mary responds to the angel Gabriel's message that she will bear the Son of the Most High, with the words, "Behold, I am the handmaid of the Lord. Let it be done to me according to your word." Mary, through her example, invites us to contemplate the true meaning of discipleship. In Catholicism, she is understood as a model for what it means to give oneself fully to God and to progress in faith, hope, and charity, seeking and doing the will of God in all things. In her Magnificat, her song of praise, uttered when visiting Elizabeth, her cousin, Mary teaches us how to praise and glorify God. She invites us to contemplate the mystery of God's work when she says, "The Almighty scattered the proud in their conceit, cast down the mighty from their thrones, and lifted up the lowly. God has filled the hungry with good things, and the rich are sent away empty." As the model of discipleship, Mary shows us what it means to grow in faith through experience and reflection. Early in her child's life, after they visited the temple, and she realized that he had been left behind, she went back and found Jesus teaching to the elders at the temple. She did not fully understand what was happening, but we are told that his mother indeed kept these things to be pondered over in her heart. She reminds us we are on a pilgrimage of faith, that it is a journey. Mary is also a symbol of God's power. I was telling my students that I was coming here to discuss Mary with all of you, and one said, "Can I say something about Mary? It might make you mad." And I said, "I doubt it, but go right ahead." And she said, "I don't believe that that's true about her, you know, being a virgin." She went on to say that she feels like the virginity of Mary has been used against women, and it bothered her. So we went on to talk about Mary and religion for about 20 minutes in a class that had nothing to do with either of those things. But was very fascinating nonetheless. You bring up Mary, and people have something to say. The church believes and teaches that Mary was a virgin and a mother. Remember that I said that symbols often contain seeming contradictions. And this is a great opportunity to think about what Mary, the Virgin Mother, invites us to contemplate. To begin, let's just say that the virgin birth surpasses all human understanding and possibility. The church teaches that Mary's virginity manifests God's absolute initiation in the incarnation, which is the central Christian doctrine that teaches that God became flesh and assumed a human nature. As the angel said to Joseph, her husband, what is conceived in her is of the Holy Spirit. Jesus is believed to be the new Adam who inaugurates the new creation. However, Catholics believe that Mary plays a part in that she welcomes the mission of Christ on behalf of all people with her yes. Her virginity is a symbol of the power of God and the depth of her faith. The Catechism states, God sent forth his Son, but to prepare a body for him, he wanted the free cooperation of a creature. To give this free assent, the church came to believe that it was necessary for Mary to be wholly born by God's grace. And this is what is meant when we say Mary is full of grace. And it is at the heart of the doctrine of the Immaculate Conception, which means that Mary was born without sin. As many of you may know, this is a very misunderstood doctrine. Most people think that we're talking about Jesus in the Immaculate Conception, but in fact, we're talking about Mary's conception. The church teaches that Mary was redeemed from the moment of her conception. Now, this doctrine of the Immaculate Conception was proclaimed as dogma of the faith by Pope Pius IX in 1854. Now, a dogma is a teaching the church believes is divinely revealed. What I think is wonderful about the Feast of the Immaculate Conception is that it had been being celebrated for hundreds of years before the church made this decree. So this teaching of the church arose from the people of the church who believed in Mary and were devoted to her. Another, and what I have come to learn is a somewhat controversial feast of Mary, the Assumption, was defined as dogma in 1950. This means the church teaches that Mary was taken up, body and soul, into heavenly glory and exalted by the Lord as queen over all things. The Assumption of Mary is a singular participation in her son's resurrection and an anticipation of the resurrection of others. Now, again, stories about an observance of the Assumption of Mary date back to the 5th century, but theological debate about it continued until 1950. The definitive doctrine states, the Immaculate Mother of God, the ever-Virgin Mary, having completed the course of her earthly life, was assumed body and soul into heavenly glory. Now, interestingly, the papal decree that validly proclaims the doctrine of the Assumption leaves open the question whether, in connection with her departure, Mary underwent bodily death. What it does say is that the promise of Christian faith is already accomplished in Mary, who is the sign of sure hope and comfort. So for our last contemplation of Mary for the moment, let's think about Mary as the symbol of motherhood. To return to my friend Susan and our interesting conversation about Mary, she said, you can read the theology and you can read the teachings, but the most important thing about Mary and what draws us to her is that she is our mother. And in times of suffering, we turn to her. We know she will not abandon us because she did not abandon her son, enduring with him his suffering until his last breath on the cross. And from the cross, Jesus gave his mother to us. John's gospel says, When Jesus saw his mother there, and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to her, "Woman, here is your son." And to his disciple, "Here is your mother." Mary is mother of God, mother of Jesus, and mother of us all. Catholics ask Mary to intercede on their behalf. At the marriage feast of Cana, when Mary was moved with pity for the family who had run out of wine, she brought up by her intercession the beginning of the earthly miracles of Jesus. And for those of you who don't remember that story, you were invited to a wedding, and you were running out of wine, and it was very embarrassing for the family, and Mary took Jesus aside and said, "Hey, maybe you could do a little something here." And of course he was like, "Well, not really my time, but you know, when our mothers say, hey, why don't you rethink that?" So he did. And so again, a great symbol of motherhood, kind of to do what he didn't really want to do. So we believe that that kind of intercession, maybe not so glibly, but the church believes that Mary continues to mediate on our behalf to God. Many Catholics embrace this and have great love and devotion to Mary. There are hundreds of accounts of apparitions of Mary that have brought healing and comfort to people around the world. This parish, of course, is named after one such visionary experience, and the name given to Mary in accordance with that. And these visions and meetings with Mary, they reinforce, as she said to one Diego, as the Lady of Guadalupe, "Am I not here? I who am your mother?" As an aside, I put this like actually in brackets. So I'd be like, as an aside, I think Mary was often key to the spread of Christianity, as she balanced this very masculine-centered religion for some people who were used to the divine feminine as well. So a friend of mine, I told you, I've been talking about Mary a lot, and a friend of mine who knows a great deal about Armenian history was telling me a story of how when Christianity was brought to Armenia, they weren't really convinced until the evangelist started talking about Mary, and they were much more open to the idea. And I wonder how often that happens around the world. So when Susan said that the most important thing about Mary is that she is our mother, because we all want and need a mother to comfort us, I was drawn back to a time of great trial in my own life as I watched my child suffer. And during that period, I found myself drawn to the rosary, something I had not prayed in a long time. And I found myself contemplating the sorrowful mysteries and finding solace in the story of Mary and a deep connection to this woman who also watched her child suffer. And through her, I was drawn to and reminded of the broader mysteries of resurrection and new life. She was a powerful symbol for me during that period. So I hope as you learn and reflect on Mary more, she can help you understand and live your faith in deeper ways. Thank you.
Thank you for that really beautiful presentation, and I always love hearing about Mary, because every believing Muslim is really taught from a very young age to love and honor and emulate Mary, and as Muslims we say, peace be upon her. We are also taught to love and revere and honor her son, Jesus, peace be upon him, and to believe in the virgin birth of Jesus. Many people are not aware of that about Muslims. There's so much misinformation about what Muslims believe and about the fact that we are part of the Abrahamic faith. There are 2 billion Muslims in the world, yet it's shameful that there's so much misinformation and efforts to polarize communities. It's rare, really, to find a Muslim that is not elevated spiritually when they read the story of Mary in the Quran, and that of her son Jesus. Peace be upon them both. In fact, any Muslim that does not believe in Mary and Prophet Jesus, who we believe to be a prophet, just like Prophet Muhammad, cannot consider themselves to be within the folds of Islam. It's that important. The Holy Quran, the Muslim scriptures, which we believe to be the final revelation and the word of God, dedicates not one, but two complete chapters and numerous other verses within the Quran to Mary and her son Jesus. In fact, if you were to put the Quran and the Bible side by side regarding passages about Mary, you would find far more references to Mary in the Quran, and any Muslim would compete with you to explain her lineage better than any Christian. The third chapter of the Quran, which is one of the longest chapters, it's called Ali Imran, the family of Imran, which is actually the family of Mary. Also, the 19th chapter is called Maryam, which is the Arabic word for Mary, Maryam. And it's interesting because the chapter of Mary was revealed to Prophet Muhammad in the fourth year of his prophethood. The new Muslim community at that time was being persecuted by his tribe, the Quraysh. And Prophet Muhammad was inspired based on the revelation of this chapter of Mary to send a group of about 80 Muslims as refugees to emigrate to what was then Abyssinia in Africa, or modern-day Ethiopia. This exodus not only introduced Islam outside the Arabian Peninsula, but most importantly, it began a dialogue with another faith community, the Christians of Ethiopia. It is our belief that a just ruler known as a Najashi or the Negus, a Christian ruler, lived there. And so there the Quran, having a universal message, referred to God as the creator of the universe, the Lord of the worlds, the King of all people. The Quran itself referred to itself as the criterion, as a reminder to the worlds. And it also referred to the continuation of the message of the prophets, Noah and Abraham, Moses and Jesus. As Muslims, we don't believe that God sent conflicting messages to different groups of people. It's people that decided to conflict the messages. It's really the same basic message, to believe in the one God, to worship the one God, to love your neighbors, to be kind, to take care of others, and to bring justice on earth. It's human beings that change that. So, it's interesting because when the Sa'ilis, after they were extradited, the Quraysh heard about them emigrating or basically going as refugees there, and they were worried that that was going to give them a platform to start to strengthen themselves. And so they went themselves, these were the enemies of the new community, to King Najashi themselves. And they told them that this is a group that has really created problems in our midst, and they are creating havoc. And so being the just ruler that he is, he called the Muslim delegation and he told them, well, tell us, what is it that you believe in? And so one of the delegates said, O king, we were a people steeped in ignorance, worshiping idols, eating carrion, committing abominations, severing relations with kinship, and ill-treating our neighbors. The strong amongst us devoured the weak. This had been our way until God sent us a messenger from among ourselves. We know his lineage. We know his truthfulness and his integrity. He called us to God, to believe in God alone and to worship him and to be good to our neighbors. Then a Najashi asked, Well, and what does he say about Mary and Jesus? So Ja'far read the chapter of Mary in the Quran. And then Najashi wept and said, "Truly, this is a revelation from God." And it was then that he swore to protect the early Muslim community. And we believe that it was this Christian king, of course, because of God's inspiration, that allowed the Muslim community to then flourish. Interestingly, the Quran mentions many women by title or reference, but it is only Mary who is mentioned by name. It is only Mary who has an entire chapter about her. So significant is her position in Islam that there are many Muslim scholars that believe that she may actually have been a prophet. Because according to the Islamic concept of prophethood, the most perfect type of human beings are prophets, and Mary was among the most perfect type of human beings. Muslims believe that Mary, Jesus, and all of the prophets that were chosen by God were actually Muslim. And this is an interesting concept. That is Muslim with a small m. Because when I mean Muslim, it means one who submits to the will of God. That's the actual meaning of Muslim. And so from the Muslim perspective, we believe that Abraham, we believe that Moses, we believe that Jesus, Mary, all of these individuals were people that were actually Muslim. Islam also does not accept the literal sonhood of Jesus, as the son of God. We can metaphorically say we're all children of God, but we do not believe that anyone shares divinity with God. As Muslims, we're very pure monotheists. We believe that God is beyond human description. God cannot be put into finite form. And the similitude of Jesus is the similitude of Adam. Adam was born without a mother and a father, is not considered to be the son of God. And same thing with Eve. And so for Muslims, we believe that all of the prophets are human. All of them were chosen by God, but that God is unique. God cannot be put in finite form. In fact, we use the term Allah, which is a very unique term because of the fact that it cannot take gender. God is neither male nor female. And God cannot be plural. The word Allah cannot be pluralized. And so it's a very, very unique term in that way. The story of Mary is a beautiful story. It begins when her mother discovers that she is pregnant and hopeful to give birth to a prophet of her people. She vows to dedicate whatever is in her womb, her unborn child, to the service of God throughout his life. She thought it would be a he, as a prophet. But when she gives birth, it's a girl. And this poses a problem, because this is a historic community in which prophets are only males, and those dedicated to serve God are only males. That was the Jewish community of the time. But you know those mothers. She says she's going to serve God anyhow. And so she puts her in training to be in service to God. And so since her father had died when she was an infant, she was put in the care of her relative Zechariah. Mary's dedication to God, even as a young girl, before her becoming pregnant with Jesus, was so complete that anyone who would behold her was astonished with her state of grace and piety. And any goodness that came to her, she always attributed it to God, nothing to herself. Mary clearly always showed exceptional spiritual nurturing and deep-seated devotion. And this is from a girl who was still a child. During her really momentous mission, the Quran says, "And behold, the angel said, O Mary, indeed God has chosen you and purified you and has chosen you above the women of the world, because she was chosen to bear the prophet of God." Now, how many know how old Mary was when she was bearing Jesus? You know, when you think about her training, you think about her life, you think, wow, is this a 35-year-old woman, a 40-year-old woman? Who knows? Just curious. Anybody know how old she was?
I heard at one time about 14.
If you look at Encyclopedia Biblica, they put her age between 11 and 14. That's what age she was when she became pregnant with Jesus and when she delivered Jesus. Imagine. Imagine the difficulty, because much of it was also by herself. So for Muslims, there are tremendous lessons in the verses that deal with Mary, the ordeal that Mary was about to face, the miraculous pregnancy, which was in that time particularly the terrible accusation that was launched against her by her own people, is something that can only be endured by a soul that has been spiritually trained by such steadfast, rigorous, and loving worship of God. So for Muslims, there's tremendous lessons in these verses, and that's why this was such an uplifting lesson for Prophet Muhammad during one of the most difficult times also in his prophethood. The importance of a parent's sincere devotion to God, the importance, because that helps raise children oftentimes that also are sincere, the importance of inculcating faith and spiritual nourishment in children. They become a role model for others that want to experience the same fulfillment. Also, it's clear that being steadfast in faith and that love for God allows one to handle ordeals with patience and perseverance. We cannot underestimate what Mary went through. We cannot compare it to being pregnant, a teenage pregnancy in this time and age. That is a completely different experience. And the Quran continues with the verse, "Behold, the angel said, O Mary, indeed God gives you glad tidings of a word from him. His name is the Messiah, son of Mary, held in honor in this world and the hereafter, and he is of those drawn near to God, and he shall speak to people in the cradle and as a grown man, and he shall be amongst the righteous." So word in this verse refers to Jesus. This is in the Quran. Word means is referring to Jesus. Mary, of course, is shocked at this pronouncement, and she said, "My Lord, how shall I have a son while no human being has touched me?" He said, "So shall it be." God just wills something, and it is. God creates whatever he wills, and when he decrees a matter, he but says to it be, and so it is. And the angels confirm to Mary that her son shall be none other than the long-awaited prophet. Mary's baby will be God's chosen emissary to the children of Israel, whom they were expecting, and he shall teach them the book and the wisdom and the Torah and the evangel, and he is a messenger to the children of Israel. Unfortunately, as we know as Muslims, historically, we believe that they completely rejected him. So again, imagine the trial that this very young woman was about to undergo. In Islam, Mary's chastity is unquestioned. It is also a model for believing men and women. But Mary's status is more than that. In Arabic, she is referred to as Al-Batul, which means that she was spiritually, morally, and physically pure. So too often people focus on the physically pure, but she was pure in all aspects. She was that model. Muslim women throughout history tried to emulate her in her commitment to God, her morality, and her dress code of modesty. Again, we find tremendous lessons in these verses. The allowability to question, so there is contentment and understanding. She was questioning, basically she was questioning God. Why is this happening to me? Mary's story continues in the 19th chapter, and the chapter begins with Mary withdrawing from her people as a spiritual retreat. And during this seclusion, God sent to her her foremost emissary, the Archangel Gabriel, whose title is simply the Spirit. And so from the Muslim perspective, when we talk about the Spirit, we are talking about the Archangel Gabriel. And he came to Mary, and it was and revealed to her that she is carrying again the prophet of God. The Quran doesn't specify the details of how it occurred. You will find within the Quran specific stories are missing many times details, because what is important is the lesson, not the exact details. It's enough to know that God wills something and it is. It's not so much important exactly how something happened. So pregnant and alone, and the pain of labor drove her to the trunk of a palm tree, and Mary breaks down, more out of fear for her noble family, who will suffer from the expected slander, the idea of a young girl being pregnant. But the Quran relates this enchanted moment when she cries out to God, and God comforts his faithful servant. And I'm using the word his, because of the limitations of the English language. Arabic does not have those limitations. The Quran again says, and then he called to her from beneath her, being the newborn son. So her newborn son called to her, do not feel sorrow. Assuredly, your Lord has placed beneath you a streamlet and shake towards you the trunk of the date palm, and it shall drop upon you dates ripe and fresh. So eat and drink and cool your eyes, and if you shall see any human being, then say, indeed, I have vowed to the All-Merciful a fast. Thus never shall I speak today to any human being. And so Mary knew that the many bounties of God that God had bestowed upon her when she was still very young, and she knew that God would be there for her in her hours of immense distress. The task of Mary's defense by God's will would be taken by the newborn himself. And as Muslims, we do believe that Jesus spoke from the cradle. Replenished, Mary returns to her people openly with her pure son. And again, shocked and disbelieving, they begin to slander her. But then she points to the infant who speaks on her behalf and says, indeed, I am the servant of God. He has given me the book and has made me a prophet. And he has made me blessed wherever I may be. And he has enjoined upon me prayer and charity as long as I am alive, and being virtuous to my mother. And he has not made me insolent or wretched. So peace be upon me the day I was born, and the day I die, and the day I will be raised to life. The final verse in the story of Mary, as related in the Quran, really addresses the dissensions that arose, particularly over generations of who is Jesus and who is God. And the Quran addresses it. Keep in mind that the Quran was revealed 1,400 years ago and talks about what happened with the community before them. And so it is within the Quran that our belief that it is not for God to take a son, glory be to him, When he decrees a matter, he but says to it be, and so it is. And indeed, God is my Lord and your Lord. So worship him. This is the straight way. And this is the verse that we believe that Jesus had also uttered. Mary, for Muslims, is a most excellent symbol of submission and obedience to God, who trusted totally in the word of God, who had no desire for the material world, and who endured the fear of her people's slander with patience because she knew and believed in God's protection and justice. And it's important, again, to emphasize that Mary's great spirituality and her spiritual achievement even preceded the miraculous conception of Jesus. So this is, I think, really very important. It might be a little bit of a divergent from oftentimes, at least my many years of exchanging and being in company of my Christian brethren, who oftentimes described Mary as a vessel for God. As Muslims, we believe that Mary was her own person. And the Quran talks extensively about her even as a child, talks extensively about who her family was, talks extensively about her even during her pregnancy. And so she was a luminary. She was a great person in herself before even having Jesus. And this is for us a very, very important point. So both together, Mary and Jesus, are really, the Quran calls them a sign for all people. The idea that two, mother and child, are bound together as one in the representation of the best of human virtues, among which is the reciprocation of concern and affection, which God has decreed between mother and child and parent and child. So Mary's entire life after conception centered around her love, guidance, and protection of her son, and protecting him from those that tried to commit evil against him. For Muslims, Mary and her son again form a reminder of God's ultimate power. Together they are one of the many signs which God sets forth to remove man from worldly preoccupation and remind him of God's magnificence and omnipotence. I know that there are even many Christian groups that no longer really believe in the virgin birth, that talk about, you know, a pregnancy of Mary, etc. But Muslims, you're going to find we're pretty hardcore, and we still uphold the idea of the virgin birth. We still uphold the idea that this is a miracle of God, because again, we become a little bit, I think, affected by the society and that we live in, that 1 + 1 has to equal 2, but we have to remember that when we're talking about God, it's not the same thing. God is capable of everything. So there's some principal issues of religion that the Quran as a whole details. First, again, the belief, and this is also within the chapter of Mary, which becomes a reminder for Muslims, is first the belief in one God who alone brings into existence whatever he wills, however he wills, and that to God is the ultimate destiny again. Also, the idea that God alone gives provision, well-being, and above all, divine guidance leading to faith and excellence in character and morality. But we have to have that training, that grounding, that inclination, and God takes over from there. Secondly, the belief in the messengers and prophets of God as conveyors of divine guidance to humanity. As Muslims, we cannot differentiate that one prophet or messenger is better than the other. You will also find, for example, whereas there have been so many instances where there have been disparaging remarks and statements and burning of Qurans and horrific kind of images of Prophet Muhammad, for example. But you will never ever find any of the 2 billion Muslims on earth making disparaging remarks about any prophet, because we consider them to be Muslim prophets as well. We can consider them to be all our prophets as well, and we think that's an insult to God when we insult those that bow down in prayer to God. Also, as Muslims, and the chapter of Mary reminds us of the unseen, namely that part of creation that God has not made manifest, the angels. They have not been made manifest to human beings yet, because God told us we believe in the angels and in their purpose of serving God and their obedience to God. We also believe in the decree of God and a purposeful existence and in the ultimate destiny of humanity. We were not brought on this earth to simply eat and drink and have fun and go to sleep and get up and do the same thing. We have a purpose. As Muslims, we're told our role is to be the vicegerents of God, and that's why we have our 5 daily prayers that keep us connected to God. We uphold the systems of morality of the prophets, and that shows up even in the way we dress. There's also the overriding theme of hope in the mercy of God, never, never giving up on God's mercy, which is something that I think that Mary was such a testament for. And I'm going to just end with a very brief verse from the Quran, which really shows that within our belief system, no one is outside God's mercy and grace. It's not up to us as Muslims to say, well, this community is outside God's mercy and grace, but I'm the one that's saved. We don't think that God took a vacation and put anyone in charge of deciding that, so we try to leave that to God. So one of the verses of the Quran is, in the name of God, the most gracious, the most merciful, for humble men and humble women, for men who give alms and women who give alms, for men who fast and women who fast, for men who guard their chastity and women who guard their chastity, for men who remember God much and women who remember God. God has prepared for them forgiveness and a great reward. And so to us as Muslims, Mary was the living embodiment of all of these traits, and Muslim men and women, pray to be endowed with the characters of Mary and to be the recipients of similar blessings. Thank you.
Smaller table, if you want to join another table, that's totally up to you. But there are 3 things I'm going to give you. So if someone at your table wants to be the person to write down any questions that might arise, because after this time that you're allotted, I will come around with the microphone and you can ask your questions at that time. But if you formulate them while you're having your discussion, somebody needs to write them down so you don't forget. So have somebody as your chosen scribe. But what did you hear, what did you learn about Mary from both presentations this evening? What did you hear, what did you learn about Mary from the presentations this evening? And then add to that, based on your faith tradition, what has always been your personal understanding of Mary? And then finally, as you're discussing, formulate any questions you have regarding Mary for either faith tradition, and then we'll have a group discussion after that. So go ahead, have your discussion. There's a lot to talk about. And when I come back up here and go into the microphone, then you'll know it's time to reconvene as a large group. Thank you.
Thank you.